I've been preaching long enough to know that it is often the story at the beginning of a sermon that is the only thing that people will go away with. Comments at the door often give away exactly which point of everything that was said people disappeared off on their own thoughts. So it is with a little trepidation that I have tried to frame the next part of what I am about to say, because I'm fairly sure I know which words will haunt me as I stand at the door and as you head off for coffee and then go home. The words I want you to hear, the words I want to linger through coffee time and lunch time and on into next week, the words I want to make sure you keep with me as we go through the sermon. This is not a morning for heading off on your own thoughts. The words I want you to hear are, I believe in the resurrection. It's not the most shocking thing that will be said this morning, but it is the most important thing to be said this morning. I believe in the resurrection. The shocking thing that I will say, the part that I worry will stick in your heads, and you may not hear anything of the possibility that comes after the words that are said, is, and I hope you're ready, I think the church is dying. Let me reframe that. I think the Church of Scotland, and very possibly the church in the Western world, as I know and love it, as we know and love it, is dying. Please stick with me. Please don't let those be the last words that you heard this morning and then go off and ponder on the potential tragedy. Instead, remember the first thing that I asked you to remember, that I believe in the resurrection. In May, after the General Assembly, Rosie stood in this pulpit and told us that the 10-year strategic plan for the Church of Scotland had been thrown out and the Council of Assembly was sent away to think about a radical action plan to be brought back to the next Assembly and put into action. Kirk Sessions were to meet in conference and to think for themselves about what changes could be made locally to create a more streamlined, fit-for-purpose church. Last month, Dunfermline Presbytery held a starting conference, and 10 members of this congregation went along to listen and participate. Next month, the Kirk Session will hold a conference, and while plans are still in the motion, I would hope that members of the congregation will be invited to come along and listen and participate. Why the frantic, frenzied activity to have people meet and discuss the future? This year, the membership of the Church of Scotland dropped again, and this time to below 350,000 people. Recruitment of young people for ministry is at an all-time low. At present, there are 1,332 congregations, and those come down to 1,023 charges. A charge involves either a linkage or potentially a charge that's gone into guardianship, and therefore they either have a minister, only one minister between several churches, or they don't have a minister at all. There are now 752 active ministers, and so there are 238 vacant charges. I made David Williams laugh this week, because I received 3 invitations this week from congregations to apply for them. That's an almost weekly occurrence to receive at least one, and I'm not going anywhere. By the end of 2023, it's thought that the number of ministers will drop further to 611. At times when I meet colleagues or friends from other congregations, it doesn't feel like a comfortable church to be in. I know I've said in at least one sermon this year that we can see congregations are ageing, And that in itself is changing who can be asked to take on roles and tasks within a congregation. And yet, I still want to say, I believe in the resurrection. And those are the words I want us to hear loudest as we explore what the readings for All Saints Sunday might give voice to in the midst of a changing church. Both readings speak of the catastrophe of the end of life, but they also bring the hope and promise of creation, of new things. And perhaps interestingly, both readings are those that might be used at funerals to inspire people to move from the finality of death to the continuity of life. The book of Revelation has often been understood as the prophecy of John the Divine looking towards a distant future that awaits, written at the time of the persecution of the early Christian church. It was a text that gave voice to the anxious voice of faithful people who faced torture at the hands of the Roman Empire. For those who felt the quashing of the possibility of the freedom of faith, the writings offered the hope of a time when the love of God would take hold of the world and bring about new possibilities for people of faith. In understanding the passing of the first heaven and the first earth to make way for the new heaven and the new earth, it's worth exploring the Greek. The word that we have translated as passing away could have been a Greek word which was apolumi, which would have indicated destruction and death. But it's really important to notice, and always frustrating that we don't all read Greek, and mine's not this good. But instead here, the word is aperkomai, a word which means to go away, depart, or end. The use of one over the other suggests that the new heaven and the new earth are not replacements for what is here, but instead there's a renewal of creation in a space where God has always been. The scholar Catherine Shaner writes, God comes into mortality, into our frailty, to dwell with us. God wipes tears, soothes grief, and heals pain because of the renewal of the earth, not because of its destruction. In the midst of death, these are comforting words. They offer the assurance that there is life after death, but there is life because of death. John's Gospel takes us to stand outside a newly occupied tomb, and all the emotions that are associated with that death: grief, loss, accusation, and anger. The gospel writer even describes the emotions of Jesus as he moves from being greatly disturbed to deeply moved, and then he weeps. They're all interesting emotions, and they explore the confusion that we feel at the loss of someone we love, and yet the gospel writer does little more than pass through Jesus having emotions. Perhaps we are to notice the presence of God in the hurt and pain we experience. The imagery of Lazarus' death and resurrection explores graphically our own experiences of death. As Jesus asks for the stone to be rolled away, Martha tries to stop him because she's concerned for the smell from the tomb. It's a pithy, graphic image. We know death smells. It stinks. We know that as a real-life lived experience in death and dying, there's a smell of decay that we cannot escape. We know that death stinks figuratively. It's not an easy process. It hurts, causes hurt. It leaves a mark upon us that we cannot seem to escape. And if we move from that image, from personal experience, to the thoughts of our church dying, then to be honest, that too stinks. It's uncomfortable. It seems out of our control. It hurts. We long to cling to what has been, only to find it slipping away in our arms. But despite the potential for the smell, for decay to have set too far in, Jesus calls Lazarus from the tomb. He does so, believing that a new thing is possible. It's the part of the story we struggle with, because our real experiences of death do not seem to be this miraculous. And yet we also know that in death we do experience resurrection. For while part of ourself dies with the one we lose, part of them is called out from our lives to shape and create a new future without them. Perhaps in terms of our church there is hope. Perhaps there's the potential for something new to rise out of the dying breaths of something we love very much. The last part of Lazarus' story has Jesus ask for his grave clothes to be removed so that he could be let go in the world. One commentator writes, "The whole story of the raising of Lazarus is for us to realize that resurrection is not just our future promise, but our present reality." If we review the stories of resurrection in the gospel, the story of Lazarus, the story of Jairus' daughter, the story of Jesus, all three of them die. And yet from their deaths, new possibility happens. The landscape of faith is changed. A new thing begins. If all you still remember from the beginning of the sermon is that you were told that the church is dying, then you will have missed the news that resurrection is possible. We are part of a church that has always believed in resurrection. As part of a Presbyterian denomination, the call to continually be reformed and renewed is within our spiritual DNA. Traditions are meant to be overturned. Regular practices are meant to take on new forms. All because the Spirit of Jesus is standing at the tomb of what is dying and calling to the new thing to take hold and happen. So on this All Saints' Day, I believe in the resurrection. Because as a congregation and as part of Christ's church, we're inspired by the generations of faithful people who have gone before us, from whose lives and deaths Jesus has called, transforming our lives with their stories of faith, so that Christ could do new things with us. I believe in resurrection because we are now those saints, those who are told to tell and show the presence of Jesus, calling the world, not just the church, to new ways of being. And I believe in the resurrection because Christ's story and God's love. Well, they were never meant to be, and they shouldn't be, and I hope they're not, encased in stone, tradition, and expectation. I believe in the resurrection because if Jesus leapt from the tomb, then he stands beyond the door, outside, still calling us to follow, to be vibrant, to offer new signs of life. I hope you believe in the resurrection too. Amen.